alcohol. Their lives had become manageable. Ed, you have our full attention.
My name's Ed and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Kevin first for twisting my arm and asking me about 400 times before I accepted. Backed me in a corner, just like everything else I did in AA. You know, backed into a corner before I did anything. I will say this, Chaz and Helen and maybe Dave Z, probably the only three that remember me from back then. And I know Helen didn't like me very much. We laugh about that now. I got to give kudos to my dad. I would not be alive today if it wasn't for my father. He got sober when I was 10 years old. So I've been around AA since I was 10 years old. That's 50 years now. I'm officially old. I went to bars with my dad. I went to a lot of AA meetings with my dad. And I hated my father. He was the reason why everything was bad in my life, including when I got here. I did not want to be like my father. And when I got here, things were so bad in my life. The man I hated the most in this world is the only one I could trust, I thought. So that's a little prelim. Other than I will say that I started drinking when I was 15 years old. Officially, I had drank a little before that, but no big deal. And I quit when I was 25. And I probably drank heavy for 7 of those 10 years. The last 3 to 5 years were a lot of blackouts and a lot of misery. I don't need to go into detail, and that's not what we're here for tonight, because most of you people have had the same similar experiences about drinking. That's why we're here. So I will try to get right into it. The only thing I'm going to say, kind of like a disclaimer, it's the reason why I only want to do step one tonight. I did not, and I repeat, did not do what was suggested for a lot of years in these rooms, a lot of years. All I did was take up space and knew I was an alcoholic and my life sucked and I made sure everybody knew about it. And my life was unmanageable, but I wasn't willing to admit that either. So I half stepped the first step for a long, long time. I made people around me miserable. I took a hostage in a first wife and I treated that woman like crap. And I wasn't brought up like that. So, yeah, I tell you how well I did. My first year, I had at least 3 or 4 sponsors. Gordy, Friedhoff, Mike. And I finally landed up with Dick Hurdle, who had passed away. And some of the old timers remember Dick. He was a really, really nice guy. But don't get on his bad side. So I wasn't willing to listen. And so I was at odds with Dick from right off the bat. And so step one, we went over step one. He says, apparently you know you're an alcoholic because you're sitting in my living room. Yeah, okay. I get that. I knew I was a drunk a long time before I put down the drink. My life at that point in 1985, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous a broken young man, and I was afraid. I was having depression and anxiety, and I didn't trust anybody. I didn't trust myself. I wouldn't let anybody get close to me. And all I did was whine and cry in meetings or be sarcastic or bust people's chops. And this is all in retrospect. This is what I saw and this is what I remember. Am I saying that's all true? Probably not. You know, because I know for myself, when I got here, my mind was pretty messed up. A little story about that. When I was probably 6 months sober, I was out in McCain and Charlie A comes up to me and I had spilled my coffee. He says, I got a cure for that. And I so intently listened to him, and I should have known better because I'd known him for a long time. He goes, next time you just get a half a cup of coffee. But at 6 months sober, I was still shaking because I was just like a child in a man's body and filled with anger, rage, fear, all those positive emotions like we all have when we get here. So I didn't do very much. And I say that not lightly, because I want to impress upon people how long I suffered. I suffered probably until I was 18 years sober-ish. And 15 years sober, I had a heart attack. It was a stress heart attack. I'm just kind of giving you an overview. But when I finally did my first step, I got the sponsor I have now. And I had gone through Derek Hurdle, Bob Ball's house, and, you know, I had Charlie Allenbacher as a sponsor, and I demoted him. So I was pretty messed up by the time Jim got a hold of me, Jim Bate. And when we did the first step, I was ready to surrender that I was an alcoholic and my life was unmanageable at about 20 years sober. And it felt like such a relief. You know, I knew I was a drunk and knew my life sucked for all those years and I was unworthy of living a good life. And so in turn, my life sucked and people suffered around me until I was almost 20 years sober. Were there some good times in AA and good times in my life in those years? Probably, yeah. But I'm talking how I felt inside and how I felt mentally and emotionally and spiritually. I was broken. At 25 years old, I was broken and I had nowhere to turn. So I thought, I'd been around AA a long time. I'd gone to Alateen and all that stuff. But I just, I can't explain it, but I just wouldn't let anybody in. The only thing was my saving grace. It wasn't a short time after I admitted I was an alcoholic that the desire to drink went away. And thank God for that. I think what was good for me, if nothing else, my dad saved my life. And I was able to hang around these rooms so I was willing to have another bottom, or not willing. I had another emotional bottom. Because when I was about 18 years sober, I didn't want to drink. I wanted to put a bullet in my brain. That's how bad it got. So if you don't surrender to the process, or since I didn't surrender to the process, like put a plug in the jug, get a sponsor, work your steps and help others. And I didn't do those things. So how could my life change? It could not change. It didn't start changing, like I said, till I was around 20 years sober when I did the steps 1 through 12 in a timely manner. So that's the 20 years of hell, roughly, of working a half step, of just putting a plug in the jug, and working a full step one. My life changed almost immediately. I got to watch, because I can get choked up and you ain't going to get nothing out of me then, because of how much my life has changed. And my dad and I had a rocky relationship. And I talk a lot about my dad because for a long time, that's all I had. That's all I would let in my life. And I was bitching to him one day how bad I thought he was a father and all this stuff. And he says, that's okay. He says, I can accept that. He says, but he says, that goes back for generations. He says, I'm not blaming nobody. This is my dad talking. He says, but he says, at some point, my life became my own responsibility. He says, at some time, your life has to become your own responsibility. So at some point, I had to take recovery and take it to myself and become responsible for my own sobriety and my own recovery. It was nobody else's responsibility to keep that plug in the jug. It was nobody else's responsibility to make me happy. I had to follow the process that was set down before us now, 85 years ago. It's all set down in the big book. And I'd like to change some of the words because I thought it was, you know, it was exempt from some of that stuff. Or I thought that language is old, so I changed stuff and I put commas in. And I can't do that. All my answers are in the big book. And you people have been there before me. You know, I never wanted to become my father. But in so many ways, I should say, how I love Alcoholics Anonymous and how I don't want it to be changed. I don't want to get too far off topic. But step one to me is the most critical step for me today. I have to remember that I'm an alcoholic every day. And I have to remember, without Alcoholics Anonymous and a spiritual way of life, my life is doomed to become unmanageable again. Looking back, I can't tell you a lot of the crappy times. I can't tell you a lot of the good times. I can tell you some of the highlights before recovery and after recovery for a long time. And I can tell you about today, but I don't want to get into too far ahead in my story. So I don't know how, I don't know whether I should go on to step two or just stop there. What do you think, Kevin? You're the master.
Yeah, I'm the master. Yeah, so anyway, you're doing a great job. And, you know, if you want to open it up to questions, and I think that may help you, you know, give us more detail of your step one.
All right. Why don't we do that? We'll open it up to questions then.
Okay, Greg, take it from here.
All right.
You're muted, Greg.
I got one.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Ed, how are you?
Good to see you.
Thank you for sharing. It's always good to hear your voice, and it's always uplifting and really sets home. I'm kind of like you, where I don't want to be, no offense, but I don't want to go 15 years into this thing being not fully happy with everything. You know, I fight, my sponsor knows I kind of fight certain aspects, and a lot of it comes down to my ego. What was the biggest thing that changed your ways after 15 years, besides the heart attack and the near-death experience?
Well, it had been coming for a long time. My wife and I, we started going to church because of my son. I don't condemn my dad for this, but he talked about every religion under the sun. That's great. But you don't talk to that to a 10 and 11 and 12 year old, and you sit there and carry on conversation. I was really messed up in there. So we started going to church, and I went on a Christian retreat, on a weekend retreat. I'm not going to go into detail about that, but it was the first time I ever felt the love of God in my life. And I knew right then and there that I had to dig more. I did a little surrendering at that time. But I still didn't give it all up. I was in the process of doing that at that time, and changing. I was headed in the right direction, and one other thing, my dad called me up one day, and he goes, "Hey, Tuxedo Bob just called me. He says somebody out of your church wants to start a meeting." I said, all right, because a year before that, my pastor asked me to start a meeting. And it's, oh, yeah, I'll do that. When I did that, my life started to change. That's where I met Jim as my sponsor. I like what he had to say. And my life started changing then, about 16 years sober. And when I asked him to be my sponsor, I knew I better get some help, because it wasn't long before that I wanted to put a bullet in my head. So that, it was a few years leading up to the actual surrender to the process, as I like to say. So that's kind of what I take your question was. So
thank you.
Ed?
Jerome. Ed?
Yeah, yes. Hi. Jerome, alcoholic. So when you meet a guy, or a guy comes up to you and asks you to sponsor him, how do you know when to start working on the steps, and how do you know how to get into this thing with them?
Well, you know, I say this about that. Go through the steps. Just get right into it. Go through the steps. Because I'm speaking for myself now. There isn't any amount of shoving AA down my throat that was going to keep me sober or make me happy. Okay? Go through the steps. Go through the motions. Because when somebody's ready, they're going to dig in. And they're going to go for it. So if you just go through the steps and share your experience, strength, and hope, a lot of that falls into place. If they're not ready, they're not ready. There ain't no changing it. You know, and I'll spend a lot more time on with some people, because everybody's different. and have learned my lessons in that area over the years. Not everybody's the same. So I just get right into it. If I got to spend a year on step one, I'll spend a year on step one. I say prayer every time before I talk with somebody on the steps, and I say a prayer with somebody before we start the steps together each step. Because I need, and I say this a lot now, I need to keep God in the conversation today. And if I don't keep God in the conversation, my life is doomed. So that's what I say. Just do it. Just jump right in. And if you keep God in the conversation, everything will be fine.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Who's next for the question?
I've got one. Hi, everybody. I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic.
Jack.
Hey, thanks, Ed, for speaking to us. It's a big commitment and really appreciate it. So when you're working with somebody and they're maybe a little reluctant to do the first step, what are some of the things that you do to get them off the dime? What do you do other than tell them your story about being miserable for 15 years? Are there some strategies you use to move people along a little bit?
I don't. That's their part of it. All I can do is offer what I've had, my experience, strength, and hope. I can't drag anybody along. It just doesn't work. And I can end up, and I've done it. I ended up creating resentments in people, and I'd won. I had to go back and make amends to people because I was too forceful, trying to be like my father was, right or wrong or indifferent, the way he sponsored people. I saw how that was done, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it when it's done to me. So all I can do is keep God in the conversation, share my experience, strength, and hope, and keep. This is what I say about AA. God gave me AA and showed me the love of AA through you people. And that's my responsibility, is to show the love of AA through you people. And I'm one of those people. So all I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And like I told Jerome, if they're ready, they're ready. I can't pound it in their heads, especially early on. I remember how sick I was early on. I can be patient, and I should be tolerant. But as far as trying to move them and persuade them, that's not my job, I don't believe. That's all I got on that, unless you have another tack to ask the question, another way to ask it or something. I don't know.
I'm Susan, alcoholic.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for your share. And I'm not sure if I have a question, and I might start crying, but your story resembles a lot of mine. But yours twisted differently than mine, but we're both here today, still alive, right? But so I was like 18 years sober, and I decided that, I guess for 15 years, I didn't go to meetings. The first 3 years I went, and I didn't like schoolwork and stuff. And so I thought, I just need to be sober. I'm sober. I hit bottom. And I believe God kept me sober between the bottom I hit and God. So for 15 years, I didn't stay sober. But one person on this Zoom called twice a year for sure, my belly button birthday and my AA birthday. Every year for 15 more years. And then one day I said, well, you can only call me one time a year now, because I went out. But I just want to share this because you're just saying how you just show the love and everything. I feel like that person, Kevin, of course you see on stage here, had he not been that unconditional love and knew that I could call him anytime, and that it also gave me the feeling that one day, because I did tell God if I ever drank again, that when I stopped drinking, stopped going to meetings, I said, if I ever drink again, I'll go back to God, to AA, because I know God brought me there, and I'll never leave, and I'll do what they tell me to do. Well, I do most of the time tell what they tell me to do, but that time I needed to get back. I called my mother. I said, Mom, I gotta call Santa. And I lived in Austin, but I was traveling back to California. I was at the airport. I'd always talk to my mom. And I go, I think I need to call Santa. And she goes, yeah, I think you do. And Santa lived now in Pennsylvania. And it's just a miracle of the beauty of God working through you guys, that all of us AA people, because if it wasn't for Santa, my friend Kevin, all those years showing unconditional love, I don't know if I would have had the courage to go into those rooms again and say I'm an alcoholic. I think my ego would have said, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed to come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just want to thank AA and what you were saying. And I just wanted to share that. I'm not sure if I have a question, but if I do, I just wanted to share that similarity that we had, but I drifted off in a different angle. But that 18-year thing, boom, hit me. And I went off on the race. And thank you for Kevin. And I'm thanking to be here today because of Kevin. So I don't know. Do you see the tear coming down my eye here? Okay, it's really coming down. So I love you guys. Thank you for your share, Ed. It really touched my heart. Thanks.
Yeah, one thing I'll say about my dad, and he never would have said this, you know, if I'd have went back out, I thought in my mind, he would go, I told you so, that you couldn't. You know, he wouldn't have done that. I mean, yeah. You know what it was about. He was a tough man, but he wouldn't have done that. That brought that back in memory. So that's
good. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Anyone else?
Hi.
Go ahead, Helen. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay, Lisa. I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic, and I couldn't
tell them what you hated me.
What's that?
Go ahead. Tell them what you hated me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Okay, I'll tell you how much. One time, you led twice in the same week, and I was at both of those meetings. And when they introduced you, I went, "Oh crap." Well, it was probably stronger than that. I wanted to walk out of the meeting. And I'll be honest with you tonight. When I logged into this meeting tonight, I had just walked through the door. I had been gone since 3:30 this afternoon. But I wanted so much to hear you today. And what I want to say, and then my question will follow it. I hadn't seen you for quite a few years. And I walked into a meeting and you were there. And I could recognize your face. But it was so different. Your eyes were just so, so different. I knew something had happened with you. And since then we've become friends, and I consider you a very good friend, knowing that I can call on you. Did anyone else ever mention to you the difference they saw in you after the surrender?
Not like you did, but but yeah, I've had people mention that over the years. And, you know, I don't know. There's two. I wanted to be so much like my father, like every young man wants to portray to be. My dad was a tough man, and I'm not going to deny that. And I'm not going to get into his inventory, but he was a very tough man. It was a different generation, but I tried to emulate him, and it was not in my person, you know. And when all that emotion finally came out of me with a legitimate fourth and fifth step, it was gone. All that crap was gone out of me. And I'm lucky to live through that and tell two different stories about AA, what can be and what doesn't have to be. Because it's a story of hope. And I need to share that crap of those almost 20 years. I have to share that, because if there's somebody sitting around in a meeting and I'm talking this about, hopefully they'll come up and talk to me. It's the story I got, and I know there's a lot of other people because I've heard similar stories. But I have to share what I have, and I think it's an important story, not because it's mine, but because it is a fairly common one. But people go out, they pull their brains out. And if I go out now, I ain't come back. I guarantee you that. I'll put a bullet in my head. My ego will not allow me to come back. I still have a problem with my ego. So... But I love you, Helen, and thank you for being in my life.
Love you, too, and you brought me to tears, you son of a gun. Love you.
Hi, Ed. This is Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
So, first of all, I'm glad that that you responded to Kevin's request. I was grateful to hear what you had to say. I think that you may have just answered it with Helen, but certainly it's not a cookie cutter story that I just heard. And I think that's why it's important that we have different people tell their stories, because like for myself, when I came in, step one was, as far as I was concerned, was done. And that was easy for me. And it sounds, I mean, obviously it wasn't for you, and to the depth of where you got towards the end, it certainly wasn't. If you could go back and change it, would you, and have it easier?
No, I don't think so. Because everything it took for me sitting here today, almost on the verge of tears, I had to do everything I did and not do at any given time in my life. Everything leading up to my sobriety and after, I had to do everything the same. I wish I wouldn't have had to hurt people along the way. That's my only, I still don't like hurting people. But I couldn't change anything, because I wouldn't be the man that I am here, sitting here today, with a lot of faults and a lot of this and a lot of that, but a pretty happy man today. So I don't think I could change anything.
Thank you. And again, I really enjoyed what you had to say.
Hi, Ed. Chaz.
Yes.
Hey, how comes you went through so many sponsors? Is it because you didn't like what they had, or didn't want to hear what they had to say? Or
Well, usually what happened, I'll give an example. Mike M., we all know Mike M., right? I thought he said something profound in his lead one night, so I asked him if he'd go for coffee with me. I think it was in McDonald's in Girard. And we talked, and he was great. It sounded good. I asked him to be my sponsor. I never called him again. So I wasn't a great follow-through guy. And sometimes I didn't. Dick Hurdle yelled at me one time, so I got Bob Allshouse as a sponsor. You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot. When I wasn't ready. I was dangerous. I was a dangerous human being back, because a little kid in a man's body, and it had a temper and an anger thing. But yeah, I wouldn't let anybody close enough to help me change inside. So I'd run. So I don't know. Some of that I can't answer, because I honestly, God, I don't remember a lot of stuff my first 5 years. You know, a bad marriage, my wife left me, and then I got hooked up with Jan before I was even half well. So it was a messed up time. It really was. When I come in and when I first met you, Chaz, I thought you had 10 years. And I watched you and I liked you and all you had good at. And you have about a year more than I do. It's like, wow, the difference in the stories and difference what you do with the gift of recovery. I almost threw it away. And any one of those sponsors would have been a great sponsor for me if I'd have paid attention and listened to them. But I just wasn't ready. Did I answer that for you, Jazz?
Yeah, good enough. Thank you. Good job, Ed.
Thank you.
Who's next?
I have another one, Helen, alcoholic.
Uh-oh.
No, this is probably a pretty easy one. Knowing that you were drinking way too much and that you were an alcoholic, do you think you came to AA that young because your dad was in AA? And like you said several times, you weren't really ready.
What I think it was? One person in particular, Charlie A, was over the house a lot. I like what he had. I like some of what my dad had. I kind of, if I want to be really honest about it, I knew I was an alcoholic a long time before I put down, but I saw my future in a lot of AA members. I saw the potential of me killing myself or killing somebody else. And if I knew I was a drunk, I knew it had enough sense of being around AA enough that I better put the plug in the jug earlier. I may not have it later. In that, all that fog and stuff, as much as I resisted the help and as much as I resisted the influence of my father, I knew I couldn't drink anymore. I was too much like my father, and I saw my father in action, and I couldn't do that to the world. Good. So I did it to AA. I made everybody miserable in AA. So there's an example. Good example. Don't be like Ed. for a lot of years. I'm okay with that. You know, and one thing I have to say that at some point I had to take a square look in the face of who I was. Even before I really did the steps, I had to take a square look at all the misery and chaos I created in my life before AA and after. At some point I had to do that. And when I could do that and accept that I was what kind of human being was at that moment, that's when I started to think about it, you know. But yeah, I kind of knew the handwriting was on the wall, and I couldn't do it no more. Because to be honest with you, I don't know whether I should have went into treatment as far as maybe a rehab, but I don't know. I had so much trouble with anxiety and depression and fear so deep. I don't even know. Maybe I needed some other counseling and stuff too. I don't know. But the path I took, I'm happy with today. I think it's what was supposed to happen. But yeah, it's been a long road, but well worth it. So I don't know if I answered it, but I went off on some kind of thing. I saw something shiny or something. I don't know. I'll say one thing. This is totally different than giving the lead. Yeah.
I'm Dwayne, alcoholic. I've got a question. You know, I'm amazed that you stayed sober without working the first step. My first AA meeting, I didn't get it. And it was about 10 years later before I finally got it. And I certainly didn't accept the first step during that time. I didn't believe that my life was unmanageable, and I didn't believe that I was powerless over alcohol. But until I reached that point, because I reached the bottom, there was no way I could stay sober. You know, during those 10 years, I always had a better way than AA. I didn't think AA had a very good way until I finally hit my bottom and I did work the first step. But so I'm just amazed that you stayed sober with only halfway working, you know, the first step or didn't get it. So, 'cause I couldn't and didn't. Anyway, that was my only question.
I think the fear kicked in. I was so afraid to drink, but I couldn't get happy and sober, you know. I'll tell you, because I hate to go down that road because I don't want to say I'm different, but each of us in some ways are a little unique. You know, we screw up our lives by drinking, and then we have a hard time quit drinking, and then we have a hard time in recovery to some extent or another. I don't know if anybody's had a smooth road once they put the plug in the jug. My story may be different than some, but there's still some out there that have similarities. And I really think this is just an observation, and I've talked to a lot of people. The people go through the first 10 years of sobriety, and they do some work, you know, but they either get serious about their program, they have struggles between 10 and 20. They survive it like I did, or they go back out, or they commit suicide. But the in-depth step work, it comes with time, I believe. And I am so grateful that God let me survive all those years. But it's what this drunk had to do to get here. I had a baseball bat in my head and all the time that I was hitting myself with it. That's what it felt like. And as soon as those voices quit, when I finally surrendered, I had so much peace and relief. I don't have those voices in that committee no more. I don't know how I lasted. You know, I was reading something today, and this is an old description of an alcoholic. Inferiority complex with delusions of grandeur. Delusions of grandeur. And that's part of a description of a schizophrenic. that's me. You know, so I don't have a good answer for that, Dwayne. I really don't. I just survived by the grace of God. By the grace of God, he loved me enough to keep me around. So that's the best I got for that answer.
Thanks.
Jim, alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, thanks, Ed. And so as a new guy coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that I drink too much and I'm in trouble, but I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous and all this kind of stuff you talk about and powerlessness and unmanageability. And, you know, and I'm asking you, like, what? So what do you mean powerless? And what do you mean my life's unmanageable? Any kind of reasonable, generic example to give that new guy of powerlessness or unmanageability?
Powerless over alcohol, the best way I can describe it. If I put a drink in my body, I'm not guaranteeing what I will do after that drink is in my body. Most likely, I'm going to drink another one. I'd say 99.9%. But after that, all bets are off, and it's not going to be good. There's always tragedy and chaos pursuing once I start drinking. Now, if you're like that, you know, in unmanageability, are you getting up and going to work every day? Are you late for work? You know, stuff like that. But specifically being an alcoholic and powerless over alcohol, I cannot guarantee my actions once I start drinking. Probably because halfway through the night, I ain't going to remember them either. So to me, that's a simple, generic answer. So.
Good. Thanks, Ed.
Anyone else?
Hi, Ed. Rena, alcoholic.
Hi, Rena.
Thank you so much for doing this. I got excited when I heard you were going to be doing it. So, you said in your talk that sometimes even today your life can become unmanageable. And I can certainly relate to that. And I just would like to know what you do to keep that from happening.
Well, it has to do with my spiritual life. Everything today deals with my spiritual life. I don't see that to be jokingly or nothing, but I believe that if I keep God in the conversation every day, all day, my life is a lot better. It's when I slack on that, the old me can come back. And it doesn't take very long. You know, I can get short with my wife. I can get an attitude against my kid. You know, stupid stuff. You know, but I can see it. But it all has to do with my spiritual life. You know, and I've heard this a lot the last few years from, like, people coming right out of the rehabs and stuff. They go, well, the spiritual part of AA. No, there is no spiritual part of AA. AA is a spiritual program, period, end of discussion. I have to include my higher power into my life every day and build a relationship with my higher power. So my life is not so chaotic. It's not so unmanageable. But I still take the reins back. It's just the nature of my beast that I got inside of me. But it's nowhere near bad as what it used to be. You know, because along with my building my relationship with my higher power, a better relationship comes with my wife, my child, who's a man now, and he's got three kids. You know, all my personal relationships around me are a lot better. So my life becomes easier and more manageable if I keep those. But, so it's all spiritual to me. Whether I'm good at it or not, I don't know, but that's my intent. So is that a good answer for you, Rena?
Yes. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Well, I guess it's my turn.
I knew you were going to do that. You got a whole list of them, don't you? A whole list of questions.
I just lay and pray.
Yeah.
Anyway, the first question I have, since, you know, you're sharing your experience, strength, and hope of really, you know, almost 50 years of sobriety or being around this program, did your dad ever get to see the light turning on you?
Yeah, I think so. Because let's see, my dad's been gone 12 years. So I'm 35 years sober, 2 or 3 years probably. And at the end, my relationship with my dad was so good. I mean, it still was some things, but that a lot of it was generational and all that stuff. But overall, my dad had a good relationship at the end, you know. So, yeah, he did get to see the light come on my brain.
No, that's great. I mean, I think that's just, I was really glad that you said yes. And because I know that your dad was sober a really long time and that you were really around the program for a long time, and I knew bits and pieces of your story, it was nice to be able to see, like, we all twist it a little bit differently every time. And it's good to know that people don't get it immediately and don't, struggle in sobriety. I mean, it's to find yourself and your higher power and your own spirituality and the people around you and your relationships and stuff like that. That's the great part. That's the great part. I'm just glad that you were able to have those few years with your dad and stuff like that. My question is regarding, like, when you see people that were similar to you following the similar path of, I didn't know you then and I didn't know what you were like, but, in the meetings that you went to, the people that you associated with, I mean, you were going to meetings during those 20 years, correct?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. And so today when you look at somebody and you can see them floundering like you did, and have, I don't know if you had an attitude or what it was. I'll talk to Helen later. I'll get the truth. when you see somebody that's, kind of making that turn that or following that same path that you did, and you want to save them from those 15 years, do you have anything that you say to them? Or,
well, that's like I said before, when you're ready, you're ready. I don't care if you're sober or not. You can't cram this down anybody's throat. I hope it's a discussion meeting for one thing, because then I can share my experience and hope, hopefully along those similar lines. But like I said, all I can be is an example and share that experience, strength, and hope. I don't think you can go over and say, hey, I think you're really screwing up in your sobriety because you're doing what I did. You need to change. They're not going to take it. I don't care what words come out of my mouth, how nice I am. They're not going to take that because you're not ready. All I can do is try to be an example of who I am today and remind them who I was before I got a little bit better. I don't think we can cram this down anybody's throat. I've seen it happen, and I see get resentments, and people never come back to the program, whether they drink or not. So.
And what do you think made you so resistant for 15 years?
I didn't want to be like my dad. Part of it. And I was scared. I was scared. I was afraid. I had such a depth of fear, like I can't even explain it. I really can't. I can't put it into words. I was afraid. I'll tell you, when I was 15 years sober, before my heart attack, well, probably after too, I was stopping 3 to 5 times on the way to work, throwing up because I was so afraid. I was so afraid. And it was just the depth of fear to let anybody in or even God in, it's funny because I remember waking up in the intensive care the day after the heart attack, and the doctor comes in and goes, "You have any stress in your life?" I felt like a light bulb went up in my head like a cartoon and go, "Okay, I get it, God. I get it." And so it started, my life started changing. I felt God do, not that he gave me the heart attack, but he was using that moment to let me know that he was there. So I think it's all when you're ready. And you can't force it. Yeah, I don't care if people are sober or not. When they're ready, they're ready. They're going to let you in, and be their friend until that time. That's why I say the love of Alcoholics Anonymous is God's love shown through you people. And that's what we're supposed to do. I understand generation things are different, but I was on 12-step calls with my dad. Oh, my Lord, fisticuffs, choke slamming. I mean, I'm like, and I got people, Chuck Gale went on this a couple of times, and I'm like, really? So I can't do that stuff, But anyways, it's, I don't know.
Well, thanks, Ed. You did a great job. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Hey, thanks, Ed.
You got me to that 650 mark. I knew you'd do it.
Thanks, Ed.
So do we have any announcements for membership?